Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by the Senior Vice President of Revenue at Outreach. He's also a guy that ran worldwide sales for Tony Robbins. I'd like to introduce Matt Nolan to the podcast. Welcome.
Hey, great to be here with you, Colin.
Great to have you, Matt. Today, we're going to dive in on how to find people with a winning mindset. I know you've got a ton of history here, but I think just to provide some context, I'd love it if we could jump in and just maybe you could share a little bit about sort of your leadership philosophy with us before we get deep into the tactical stuff.
Yeah, I'd love to. You know, I interview a lot of people, and one of the questions I get is, you know, what's my leadership style? And for a while in my career, I was trying to always put an answer together on the fly. And one night I'm like, I get asked this all the time. I ought to have a really good answer. And so I really started thinking about, as a leader, like who I want to be for my team, who I would want as a leader, what are those attributes? And I broke it down to three areas. Recognizing how hard everybody works is like, number one, I want to have fun. And I want my team to have fun. We work long hours and we're in battle together. And I think everyone should find a way to, you know, release the pressure at work and to be able to have fun. Whatever fun is for you as an individual, whether it's, you know, throwing the football around the office or taking a walk, like whatever it is, like you just got to enjoy the day. We're working too hard and too close and too often, not to make it like a really enjoyable experience. So my first pillar is, I give everyone permission to have fun. Like, you just got to do it. Second is, I have developed over time what I call an empathy for the team. And I define empathy, Colin, as an understanding and an appreciation for the hard work that people do in any customer-facing role. You know, this is not easy. It's a sport of love. And I've carried the bag. I've done many of the roles myself over my 31 years. And like, I want to make sure I never get amnesia and never forget what it was like to carry the bag, do the work. So I really do carry that empathy for the team. And then third pillar is, look, at the end of the day, our people and our customers, they count on us to do the right thing. And when an employee has a challenge, you know, you don't want to open up the company handbook and look for policy. You know, we're in a people business. You got to do the right thing for your team, and you got to do the right thing when a customer calls up and what you promised didn't get delivered for whatever reason. You know, you got to step up and do the right thing. And I think as a leadership pillar, when your team knows that you got their back and when your team knows that you got the back of the customer, you know, they're going to perform and operate at a better level for you. So those are my three pillars or leadership principles.
And it's so helpful having that trust sort of built with the team that they can go out and they can have fun and they can empathize. It sort of creates that. Would you say it creates a safe space for them to do that?
Yeah, it's a safe space, and it's an environment where, like, I know when I sell something, the company is going to deliver. I know if I need a hand, you know, my leadership team's got my back. Because not every deal like goes right down the middle. Everything's perfect. The price is right. The terms are right. You know, the customers, everything's right. No, like sometimes you got to work a deal and going in with the attitude that we're going in to make yes happen, as opposed to the attitude like, holy crap, what's this bag of stuff that we've got to work with? No, we go in every opportunity with the outcome of making yes happen. And not just myself, but, you know, really wrangling up the entire team, you know, get legal and finance and, you know, the folks that set it up and then deliver the success, you know, we all go in with yes. And when the company behind you has yes as that attitude or that lean forward posture, you know, the rep has more confidence when they're out in the marketplace competing.
That's awesome. Because when you think about it, every deal we encounter is never the perfect deal. And when anytime I find that perfect deal or something I think is that perfect deal, I'm like, I'm missing something. Something has gone wrong here.
Or you get hit in the 11th hour. You know, it's going along and all of a sudden the 11th hour, a competitor shows up that either wasn't in or, you know, something changes, right? Your champion all of a sudden decides to quit and take a new job and someone comes in to take over, has no clue, or they may have a relationship previously with your competitor. You just always have to be ready.
Mm-hmm. So just to pivot the conversation a little bit, you and I had a conversation a few weeks ago, and you walked me through your SAM model. Is it SAM, SAM? What do you refer to it as?
Yeah, so let me back up a little bit. I used to drive a race car, started in the late 80s, and I learned something really quick on the racetrack. And what I learned, Colin, was that there is more bad luck than good luck on a racetrack. You've got 43 cars all fighting for one position. You've got the risk of mechanical failure. You've got the risk of someone, you know, taking you out. There's just so many things that can go wrong and so little that can go right. Mm-hmm. The best driver doesn't always win. The best car doesn't always win. A lot of things have to happen to win a race, including a great car and great driver.
Can we sidetrack a second? I'd love some context there. What kind of race car driver were you? We don't have too many race car drivers on the show here.
Oh, I'm sure you'll find a lot of people will raise their hand and go, I did. So I was in the SCCA sanction. We did road racing and stock cars.
Very cool.
Tracks like Sebring, Moroso, Daytona, Road Atlanta, down in the Southeast, Homestead. But here's what I learned driving on a track, that there were three things that I could control. Number one, I could control my own skill, like how much I trained and practiced in terms of my skills as a driver. The second thing that I could control is how much money I put into my car to buy the fastest motor, the best suspension, the best brakes. Yeah. I could go fast, stop fast, and turn fast. And the third thing that I could control was how much preparation time I put in for every race. And on average, I prepared 8 hours for every 1 hour on the track. And those were the things that I could control. And when I got into sales, I quickly learned that on the streets of selling, there is more bad luck than good luck that can happen to you. You know, there are multiple competitors for one deal. There's no trophy for second place. When I raced, I still got trophies for second and third place. I didn't get a whole lot of second place trophies in sales. So you learn really quick that, you know, you got to figure out what are the variables in selling that I actually do control. Mm-hmm. And I boiled it down to three things. You'll learn with me, there's a lot of groups of three here. And I call it SAM. And it's real simple. What comes out of my mouth, I control. What I do all day, I control. And how I approach the day, the opportunity, and the things that happen, I control. So S is for story, A is for activity, and M is for mindset. Let me break it down a little bit more. Story. Story, and whether you're a sales development rep, you're an account executive, you're a customer success manager, the conversations that we have all day with our prospects and with our clients are the stories that we tell. It could be a story to get a meeting, run a meeting, close a deal, progress an opportunity, whatever it may be, renew, upsell, cross-sell. It's a series of conversations. And when you have a story, when you've got something that's compelling, it's with conviction, you tell it with passion because you really give a crap, you're much more likely to move somebody to the next level if you've really got a great story. So that's what S is. Then there's activity. And most of us, and today on your podcast, look, we understand the activity levels necessary to win today, regardless of your position. You have to make so many moves, whether it's phone calls, emails, meetings, whatever it might be, follow-ups. You've got to do so much, and then not just the activity itself, but with a certain quality conversion tied to it. So I've got to make 70 calls today, and I've got to connect with 12 people and get 5 meetings out of it, whatever your conversion ratios are. And you've got to do the activity. In fact, in sales, there is no replacement for the activity. Just you got to do the work. You got to do the work. I tell everybody, like, when we hire, you just got to do the work. Mm-hmm. And it's great. Third is the mindset. And mindset is where you win and lose the game. Mindset are like the belief systems that you have. I always say sales is a bunch of BS. BS meaning belief systems. Like what you actually believe. There's empowering beliefs, which are beliefs that bring you closer to everything you want in life. And then there's limiting beliefs, or all the reasons that something can't get done. And you know, the best people have a mind full of empowering beliefs. They have what they need to win. They know what they need to do, and they're going to take the action to get it done. But mindset's your desire, your hunger, your commitment to your goals, your commitment to yourself, your identity, and you know, hitting your number and sitting on top of the leaderboard. It's your internal motivation. It's your drive. you know, it's what gets you up a little bit earlier than everybody else and in the office a little bit earlier, making those calls just a little bit earlier than everyone else and staying a little bit later, you know, 5 after 5, making those 5 calls after 5 o'clock, like whatever that is. It's your outlook. Mm-hmm. Like it's just your overall outlook. And then lastly, I say it's the accountability that you place on yourself. Like at the end of the day, like a strong mindset, like I own my outcomes. I own, at the end of the day, my own success or failure. Nobody else. I can't look anywhere else but in the mirror. And having that mindset where I've got very strong beliefs, a strong hunger, like I stay hungry, and I've got a commitment to what I believe in and stay true and all that. You bring all that together. And here's what I'll tell you, Colin. When that is who you are up here, just imagine how much more passion you bring when you tell the story, how much more conviction, how much stronger you are, how much less likely you are to fold under an objection or two, and how much more energy and zeal you have taking those activities all day long when you put this all together. So for me, it's like a success system. You've got a killer story. You're taking the right actions and activities all day long with the right conversion metrics, and you're unstoppable. You really are. You're going out there ready to go. And if you find yourself hitting a little bit of a funk or a little bit of a rut, go back to the leadership pillar of fun. Go find someone and say, hey, man, I bring me back. Bring me back. Like, I got to get my swagger back. Yeah. So those are what I call SAM. And I think it's a great principle. It's very basic. But for anybody in a customer-facing role, you know, if you've got your story down and you're doing the hard work and up here you're mentally strong, you've got it. Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's the first two that everybody's really been teaching us, you know, most of our lives. And I think more and more recently, we've been becoming aware of how important a role mindset plays in the success of, you know, salespeople, professional athletes, you know, whatever it is. You know, there's been a lot of research to show that, you know, mindset is something that you can in fact cultivate, but it seems like that's a really long-term journey. So I don't imagine you're hiring people and saying, okay, if you can do the first two, the third one, you know, mindset, we can teach you mindset. I mean, I'm sure you can to some extent, but not within the time horizon that you need somebody to perform on that job.
Yeah, I don't think you can teach mindset. And I'm not saying I'm right in any of this. I mean, this is just Matt's opinion today with Colin. I think you have to find it, nurture it. I don't think you like can teach it. And for anyone here that has kids, I've got three kids. They're all different. You know, their outlook on life, their hunger, you know, just, you know, some of them just wake up a little bit rosier than other, like just their overall disposition. And I'm not going to tell you which of my kids, you know, I can't go train them to wake up differently. It's just natural disposition that people have, but there's ways to nurture it and reward it and build on it. But it's in many cases what separates people from other people. It's really, you know, how hungry they are, like how hard they're willing to work. You know, it's funny that you bump into people, you know, it's 5 o'clock, they leave the office. And there's nothing wrong. Like if you have to leave, you know, some people have family commitments, so this is no judgment. You know, other people have a list of 32 things they have to get done that day, and they leave the office when 32 things are checked off. Like, not judging, but it's just a completely different mindset of, like, when the day's done.
Yeah. I like, if I could paraphrase what you just said just before, is mindset isn't something you teach, but it is absolutely something that you can learn. So you can't force somebody to change their mindset, but if I'm an individual, I can slowly work my way at getting better at it.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept, and I don't have that answer. I would say, though, as we look around at friends, at family, at coworkers, and you just start thinking about, you know, just different scale, like mentally strong and like tough, right? Just mentally tough. But also, like, it always is in the person. Let me give you an example. Like, for instance, if you took a job and you need a paycheck. I mean, you literally took the job because you needed a paycheck. And sometimes you got to do that. You've got obligations and you got to go get a job. You know, as things get tough in the job and it's only a job, you'll tap out. Like it'll get old very quick. And there's a lot of places to work today. And you'll tap out and you'll move on. But some people are like professionals. There's a lot of people on your podcast that are career professionals here. And, you know, as a career sales professional or customer facing, whatever their role is, you know, think, look, we know things happen. We know things happen as part of what we do in selling. And we have a little bit more like calluses build up. So it doesn't, you know, we don't immediately get teed off and tap out. But to a point, you might. You just might sick of product challenges or price points or competitive landscape. And you might go find something else. You really will. What I've found, though, is that there are people that attach themselves to organizations and represent a product, a technology, or a cause, where it's deeper than a job and it's deeper than a profession. It's a mission. It's like, holy crap, this is what I was built to do. Like, they finally came up with this product that solves this problem, and I will run through walls, burning buildings, and whatever it takes to get this from, you know, our warehouse to the street. Like, I would, some people do this volunteer work for, whether it's church groups or Red Cross or certain products. Like, you just find that this is what I was built to sell. Mm-hmm. Now, what I'll say to everybody is, if wherever you are right now, you could be in your car, you could be in your home, you could be in your office. And if you just looked around your environment, everything you're looking at was sold by somebody to somebody. So we have tremendous abundance. And by the way, this is a good belief system, but we have tremendous abundance in selling. A lot of times it's a scarcity mindset, not enough leads, not enough deals, not enough customers, whatever it might be. But in truth, there's abundance for us all, because everything is bought and sold, including the air we're breathing. If you're in a car, a house, or a building, it went through an HVAC system that somebody sold. So right down to the air that we're breathing, you know, it was sold. So, like, there's an opportunity for everybody to align at that mission level, if they really want to, where they can represent something at a level where, like, they'll do whatever it takes. Like, little things aren't going to bother them. Big things aren't going to get in the way, because it's bigger than that. I'm representing something that I know. I'm changing the world with my technology. I'm changing the world with the care that we're giving people that need the care, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And in that case, like, you start to change everything, because now you're tapping into a part of the mindset that aligns with, like, your identity. You know, I'll say one more thing. I know I'm talking a lot here, but there's a great line that I always
come back. That's the goal of the podcast, by the way. That's the goal of the podcast, is to have the guests come on and talk.
I thought I was going to listen to you. That's crazy. but there's a great expression I heard somewhere along the way, that the most powerful force in the human spirit is the need to stay consistent with the identity you create for yourself. I can say it again. The most powerful force in the human spirit is the need to stay consistent with the identity you create for yourself. And there's a lot in that, but if you really think about it, like, people will go to great lengths, like, to defend their identity. And within your identity is a lot of power, a lot of purpose. So if you can really tap into who you really are and tap into that and align that to what you're really doing, you really start to make the magic happen.
Mm-hmm. Some it's Cialdini. I always say it wrong.
Cialdini.
Yeah.
Influence. Kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I think most recently, Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky, they got some great stuff on the consistency theory. Consistency theory? Consistency bias. Something.
Commitment and consistency.
Mm-hmm.
And with Cialdini, it's the law of one of the seven laws.
That's right. So we've talked a lot about how important mindset is. You know, whether or not you can coach it, teach it, sort of, let's just agree that's up in the air. We're not sure, and we're not going to cover that on this podcast. But let's assume that for the time horizon that you're trying to hire a sales rep for, whether it's an account exec or a BDR, you know, there's probably not a lot of change that can happen in a very short period of time. So what you really want to do is find people that have that winning mindset.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, I'd love to learn from you. How do you find people with that winning mindset?
So, you know, it's not easy. And in keeping with it, I love to have fun doing it. So a couple of things. I think, you know, making your hires are so critical. So critical. And there's a few things that I've done to try to weed through, like, the real deal. And what I found with salespeople, you know, great salespeople, mediocre salespeople, a profession of, you know, being paid to tell stories. So, you know, many people can sell themselves better than they can sell your product, I've found. So it's really like, you know, how do you figure it out? And, you know, by the time, you know, I get to interview reps, you know, there's been some screenings that have gone on. And, you know, I typically see somebody that's top of their class, you know, typically in the top three of the team that they're currently on or last on. You know, they've been to President's Club a few times. Like, they've got some really great accolades about them as I look at their resume. So the first thing I do, Colin, is, you know, we'd be sitting down together and, you know, I'd just go through your resume and say, man, this is really strong. Like, I'm not doubting, have you really done all this? Yeah, you'll say, yeah, I'll say, this is very impressive. And it says here, Colin, that, you know, you've been at ABC company now for 3 years as number one rep, correct? Cool. Why don't you do this? Before we start the interview, I got to hear the pitch. I got to hear the pitch from the number one guy. Stand up and give me the pitch. And, you know, one of the things that I'm amazed by is how little that we actually test people for selling, like when we're hiring for salespeople. And so I like, give me the pitch. And I come back to that line, how you do anything is how you do everything. So my thought is, hey, if you can give me a really compelling, concise pitch from ABC Corp, then I know you'll be able to do it for me too. Like, because you've taken the time to do it, you're doing it well, great, got it. So it's a really good test, like, can you do it? Because, you know, the truth is, when you're interviewing someone, to me, it's like the zoo. Like, the lion doesn't eat people in the zoo because it gets fed raw meat every night at 5 o'clock. And, like, it's just like a controlled environment. And everyone's happy in the zoo. You take pictures of the animals and you leave and it's all good. But sales happens in the jungle, not in a conference room or an interview room. Sales happens out on the street. So how do you, like, recreate the jungle environment in an interview process? And you start off by sell. Like, and not sell me a pencil that I don't need. Sell me what you got. Like, yeah. I'll make you really comfortable. I'm not asking you to sell anything you don't sell every day. Sell me what you do every day. Now, normally, what I hear back when I ask that is the rep will go, well, Matt, what I normally do is this. And I say, don't tell me what you normally do. Just do what you normally do. Like, stand up and do it. Or if you're phone-based, you know, do a ring-ring and let's just role play. But let's do it. And, like, if they can't do that, like, there's no use moving on. Like, there really isn't. Like for me, like, if you can't sell, we're good. Like, nice to meet you. So that's the first thing, like, just in terms of, you know, like, their attitude toward the I call it stand and deliver, their attitude toward it. And quite frankly, like, how much of themselves do they bring in that environment? Like, how much do you really bring of yourself? Like, are you a little uncomfortable, or are you, like, kind of worried about it, or do you just go full out? Like, I'm going to show this exactly what I got. Like, I'm just going to bring it. Like, I don't care. You know, like take a risk and really put yourself out there. Like, I want to do that. Like, you don't get a lot of second chances. So that's the first piece. The second piece is really testing for the mindset, or what we call ego strength, not ego, but ego strength, which is really like how resilient you are. And that comes back to that saying, the most powerful force to stay consistent with your identity, right? So we'll challenge that. We'll challenge their inner ego, their identity, and we'll see how hard they fight. And it's really easy. You just do a quick role play. And so I'd say, Colin, what do you think if we could literally just fill this position based on one attribute? Like, what's the single most important attribute in an account executive today? What do you think that one attribute, if I could hire for?
Mm-hmm. I think the answer I gave you last time was grit. I was thinking of something more clever, but
grit's great.
Explicit rating on the podcast. So let's stick with grit.
Yeah, grit's great, by the way. It's hunger, you know, it's just drive, it's not letting go. And Duckworth says it's where passion meets perseverance, right? So it's great. Grit's great. And I'll say, oh, Colin, look, you and I are completely aligned. If I could pick one attribute for success, it'd be grit. The challenge is, you and I have been talking for 30 minutes and I don't see grit. And if they don't come back and fight, if they don't defend their inner self, then they don't have it. If they are truly gritty, they're going to be like, what the heck don't you see? Mm-hmm. They'll do it to the point where they would literally risk the job to protect themselves. I literally interviewed a lady one time. She was awesome. 4'10". Great interview, but I do this to everybody, whether the interview is great or not. And about halfway through the interview, I challenged her that I didn't see the hunger. And she literally came across the table. She got about 6 inches from me and she goes, "What don't you see?" It was awesome. Like, it was awesome. Like, it was exactly what I wanted to see. I felt like saying, "You're hired." But it was like really good. Like, I could just tell, like, she had really strong ego strength. And then the third thing that we do, at Outreach, we do it at a different point in the process. But, when someone's going through the interview process and they have multiple conversations, it's very clear what I call the performance standards of the job are. And they're really just professional minimums. Like, depending on your job, the minimum number of calls you're going to make, the minimum number of activities you're going to make, the minimum number of meetings you're going to set, run, or whatever it might be. Like, there's some minimum activity level that is associated with every job. Mm-hmm. So before I offer someone a job, I'll say, "Colin, were we really clear with you on the performance standards associated with the job?" And they'll say, "Yeah." And I'll say, "Do you promise to do them?" Because all the way through the interview process, you promise to do these performance minimums. And so I would have that candidate send you an email from their personal address with a promise statement. Like, "I promise to do the minimum. And, if you're ready to hire them, that's the last step before you'll make them an offer. You send me from your personal email a note with what you promise to do if we offer you the job. And then on their first day, you can print up 2 copies of that email. You can put one in where they sit and one where you sit, and just as a great reminder of what we promise." And by the way, we promise to do a lot. We promise to train you, support you, nurture you, develop. Like, there's a lot that we promise too. But usually the candidate breaks their promise before the employer does. Mm. So it's we do a promissory here at Outreach. We do this in our boot camp training. We have everyone write themselves a note, like, where they're going to be in 6 months, and we mail it back to them. A good way to remind them what they've committed to do.
Talk to me about that promissory note. So they're sending this to themselves in the future.
Yeah. So last day of boot camp, we call it boot camp. We have a graduation ceremony.
Yeah.
And we hand out some nice stationery. And we have them write a note to themselves about where they promise to be in 6 months. Like, given all that they've learned that week, the high of the euphoria of the training and the opportunity, like put it down now. Like, where are you going to be?
Yeah.
And then we have them literally write the note to themselves. They address an envelope. We seal they seal their envelope, and then we mail it. We never look at it. We mail it to them in 6 months. And I'll tell you, just a couple weeks now, one of my reps took a picture of his note and sent it to me. And kind of had a nice laugh together, because a lot of the commitments he had made to me personally in the interview process. So it's nice. It's nice to see people receive that and take it, and it makes an impact.
And there's something to it when you commit to something, but I think when you commit to it in writing, not just, I'll buy you a coffee next time, but do you find the act of putting it down in writing, changes that?
Yeah. I mean, you're putting it on paper. Like, it's a promise. Like, one of the things we do we don't do forecast calls. We do what we call commit calls. Like, a commit's a promise. Like, a forecast is a goal. It's a little bit softer. Mm-hmm. We take language very seriously. And we do promise calls or commit calls, and we tell you, it's just little things that you can do to tighten up everyone's commitment and how we think about the business.
That's fantastic. And so when you're going through these commit calls, it's similar to a forecast call, but yeah, you're getting each rep to basically
commit,
stand up and commit, "I'm going to bring in this much revenue."
Yeah. So the commit number is like a promise number. It's not the best case, but it's a promise number. It's like, you can count on me to do this. I promise.
Do you get them to give you like a promise ring? Like we're in high school.
Well, we document the commit. So, you know, and then we get a number that's, they give us a different number that they don't promise the bigger number, but given all that they're working, they can most likely do more. So we get that too, but we get the commit.
Cool. I want to take a couple minutes and talk about, and just see like, what are your thoughts on how do you cultivate, how do you maintain this mindset? And I think a lot comes back to what you talked about up at the top, which is your sort of leadership pillars, having fun, empathy, and, you know, always being able to count on the people around you. What are some other ways that at a reach that you sort of cultivate and help maintain this, the high level of mindset?
Yeah. I mean, like you walk the floor, you jump on calls for your remote people, you know, you just make impromptu, you know, connections, whether it's a text, a voice call, you Slack them. Hey, you know, nice job. You know, a lot of mini celebrations to keep the energy moving. But one of the things that we also do, you know, back to the amnesia point at the top of the show, was we have a sales advisory excellence panel. And it's made up of a couple of folks from each of the customer facing teams. And it's nothing more than for us to get feedback on things we're about to do, whether it's a promotion, a training, whatever it might be. And we run it by this group to say, hey, this is what we're thinking about doing. What do you think about it? And that way, you know, they give us really good input. You know, they tell us like a better way to roll something out, a better way to do this, a better way to do that. And that way, when it rolls out, number one, the team knows that it's already gone through a subset of the team. Like, no one's saying, like, who the hell thought of this? Mm-hmm. Like, the worst thing you can do is roll something out, and the front line is just like, don't they know how it's really done? Right? You're laughing, but it's like, you know, so how do you avoid that? And, you know, we run as many of the things that we can through a subset of the team for feedback. You know, we built out a new sales process. We took a subset of our team to really help us build the sales process, not just roll something out that didn't work. We came up with our new messaging construct. We took some of our top sellers out of the field for a couple of days and really had them build out with us, you know, the messaging construct in a way that they could actually use it. Mm. So it doesn't look good on paper or in a conference room. It actually works really well when you're talking to a real customer on the street. So, you know, as much involvement and engagement as we can. And the other piece is transparency. You know, just like if you make a mistake, tell your team you made a mistake. Like just own it. Just be real. And, you know, the things that you can do. And look, none of this is breakthrough. Holy crap, I've never heard this before. But, you know, when you build these into the way that you do what you do and consistency and what your team can count on from you, it all helps.
You can see how all these tiny little, what seem like inconsequential pieces, they all sort of build and build and build.
Stacks up.
Yeah, it's the stack of 1,000 great habits makes a great team, it seems. Yeah. I'm curious about the, if we look at all these little habits that are sort of stacked throughout the whole outreach team, I wonder the ones specific to yourself personally, Matt. Like what are some things that help you? You've got this good energy too. You're always a smiley guy. And in sales and in management specifically, that's not always an easy thing. So what are some things that you do to cultivate this youthful energy?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking and haven't been called youthful in a while. So that's awesome.
Your assistant paid me to do so.
But one of the things that I recognize in leaders is sometimes there are leaders like you wonder, like, what mood is Colin going to be in today? Like, which Colin's coming into this meeting? And like, that stinks. Like, when you've got to wonder how your boss is going to show up, mm-hmm. or your boss's boss, so I, number one, like I never want to be that guy. Like, as long as I'm on the floor, like, there's only one me. Like, I want to show, you know, a steady hand. I want to show, you know, confidence and support. So that means, you know, I've really got to make sure that I'm in the right place every day for my team, because it's not just me. You know, there's folks that count on me, and not just folks, but those folks have families, right? So it's like, it's serious business. So I wake up about 4:45 every day, doesn't matter, 7 days a week. And I learned something, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago. like there's only, look, all of us have 24 hours in a day. And I get that. But if I wake up an hour earlier than I used to, mm-hmm. I'll go to bed at the same time. But if I wake up an hour earlier, so that means I've got 7 hours a week. And if you're awake, you know, 16 hours a day, give or take, then every 2 weeks, I got a waking day back. And that's 2 days a month. That's 24 days a year. It's almost a month. So it's like the first thing I figured out is I can live like a month longer every year, at least of awake time. And I really don't miss the sleep. I got to tell you, like, so like if you can have a month of doing stuff and a little bit less sleep. So I wake up early, and what I try to do is I try to learn something every morning. Try to learn something. So I go to YouTube, I'll watch a TED talk. I'll learn like something on alternative energy. Like I'll just research something. I just want to learn something. Oftentimes I'm just fascinated by speakers. So I'll research different speakers or different talks and try to learn a different skill. Because for me, language matters. And you start the day off. I'll take my dog for a walk, get a little exercise. I'm not an early morning workout guy. And then I'm at my desk by 6:10 every day.
Whoa.
Yeah, whoa. But I love it. By the way, I'm not the first guy in the office. And because I'm on the West Coast and I've got national responsibility, that means it's already 9 o'clock for my East Coast team. So I consider myself late. And I'll usually make my first call in the drive-in to one of my East Coast leaders. So it's it's just about, committing, making sure that you start your day with some personal nourishment, whatever that is for you, then coming in and living who you are, like living your own persona. I stay active. I have fun. I'm smiling because, I enjoy this. I enjoy the conversations we've had as I got to know you, and I enjoy what I do. And, that comes out. Like when you really do enjoy what you do and who you do it for and you care about it, like it becomes authentic. It's real.
Mm-hmm. There's no faking. There's no faking that.
No. Because the stress burns right through the facade.
It's so much easier just to show up and be yourself than to try and pretend to be something else.
Yeah. If you show up and be yourself, then you don't have to remember who you thought you were. Just be you.
Yeah. I got one last question. It's actually not a question. It's sort of our surprise segment that we don't tell guests in the pre-interview. It's the fun part, and it's funny. It reminds me of what you do in your interviews. So if anybody's listening that Matt's interviewed recently, maybe you'll get a kick out of this. But the last segment that we do, our surprise segment, I call it Ring Ring. So this is your opportunity to promote outreach, but you got to cold call me first. Are you game?
Oh, dude, let's go.
Cool.
And I want a lot of objections, by the way.
Lots of objections?
Yeah. Like, let's just have some fun with it.
All right, cool.
Ring, ring.
Hey, this is Colin.
Colin, Matt Miller from Outreach. Reason I called is I'd love to give your salespeople a fatter wallet.
Well, Matt, you know what? I'm super busy today.
Of course you are. Successful guys are always busy. But before you hang up on me, let me ask you a question.
One question, then I got to bail.
Perfect. Aren't you a little bit interested in how I got you on the phone today?
I'm guessing you just licked my name up in an address book.
Absolutely not, because I know you don't take calls all day. And listen, between you and I, this is what you want for your reps. Your reps are hitting the phones all day long, and you want them to get connections. There's a reason that you and I are on the phone right now, and this is what I can help you do with your team.
My reps have a phone tool. We've got an email tool. They get connections to their customers all the time. Don't think we need anything.
First of all, I want to congratulate you because not all sales leaders make the kind of investments in their team that obviously you have. I'd love to take a few minutes and understand the investments that you've already made, the results you're getting, and what the next level looks like for you.
We're already using, let's call it Dialer X. We're using email tool Y, and we've invested, $20,000 last month in some call training from consultant Z. Our guys are good.
What does good mean?
20 meetings a month.
You making your number confidently, comfortably every single month?
I'm balancing between giving you a tough time, but let's leave you an opening. You know what? They're doing 20 a month. but they could be 20, they could be higher quality meetings. They're not all the greatest.
Yeah. I'm not here to say that I can do any better for you. What I can say is you and I should spend a few minutes digging in and seeing if I can't help. Look, leaders like you are always looking for the edge, looking to take your team to the next level. If you can bring your team higher productivity, you bring your company higher revenue efficiency, you're a hero.
I still don't quite understand what it is that you're trying to, you know, you say you can help me, you know, make my salespeople's wallets fatter. What does that even mean?
Well, let's talk.
Well done. Matt, thank you so much for coming on the show. That was really fun. I think you killed it. I love all the objections. I wish I would have prepared some more objections ahead of time.
I don't do the phone all day, so I appreciate the bringing me back to my days. That was fun.
It's not every day you find an SVP that is like, you know what, give me some more objections. I want lots of objections. Make this hard for me.
Yeah, I want the hard stuff.
I think that's a testament to the mindset and everything else we just talked about.
Cool.
Right on. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. If people are looking for a job or want to, you know, they're intrigued by your cold call, what's the best way they can get in touch with you?
Oh, we don't want anyone looking for a job. We want mission-driven salespeople that they can bring all of their identity to the table. But the best way to find me is Matt Millen on LinkedIn. Love to connect and talk further.
Sounds great. All right. Thanks again for coming on the show, Matt.
Take care.